Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Reba Ann Lee, Assistant Director of Academic Technology and E-Learning at Marist College, Maggie McVeigh Lynch, Director of Statewide Teaching and Learning Services at Oregon Health and Science University, and Megan May, Quality Assurance Team Lead and Project Planning Coordinator at Indiana University. The session is entitled Lessons Learned from Deploying Sakai, an Interinstitutional Panel Discussion.
Hi, I'm Maggie Lynch. I'm just going to give a little bit of context to what we're going to do today and ask that you hold your questions till the end. We're trying to leave a lot of time at the end for all the questions at once. So what we're really going to be talking about is we're going to present to you our implementation from each of our universities with a little context about what the university is, the types of implementation we undertook, how we approached that with Sakai, what types of tools we may be using with it, and then what our lessons learned were from that. We're all from kind of different parts of the institution, but I think we've all been really actively involved in Sakai for quite some time. So we'll certainly entertain any questions afterward, and you can also join us for lunch if you are really lonely and think that it might be interesting. I also wanted to announce we have, for the second year in a row, a contest for our Sakai users for Teaching and Learning with Sakai Innovation Award. It's sponsored by IBM and some other supporting institutions. If you are a Sakai institution or if you think you will be before April and you might have some courses that you would like to try out in this, come on up and you can get one of these little handouts. I didn't bring enough for the entire room, so if you don't think that you're going to want to apply for the contest, don't bother to get one. So we're going to start off with Reba Anna from Marist College, and then we'll go on to Megan from Indiana University, and I'll finish up. Reba Anna?
Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. How is everyone? Excited. All right, anybody here from California? Yay! Okay, during lunch, we'll have to catch up about the Chargers and things. I'm from San Diego. And if you're interested in how I ended up in the Hudson Valley, please have lunch with us. I do need to go over some important details, which ironically have to do with turning off your cell phone. please turn off all cell phones and pager ringers. Do people still use pagers? Okay. Videotaping or photography of any kind is not allowed. If you do take any pictures of us, we will sign them for you. please complete the evaluation form and return it to the table outside this room at the end of the session. And that's Reba Anna, in case you want to put something about me on the evaluation. okay. First of all, I am from Marist College, and our iLearn implementation is right in the middle. So as you see me here today, there are people, well, there's one person back in the office trying to juggle the migration process and training. So I'm glad I'm here, basically. Our instance of Sakai is called iLearn, and iLearn stands for Innovative Learning Environment and Research Network. We have that name because it's something that's a little bit different, but different schools will have different names for Sakai. The interface, however, will be familiar if you were to go from school to school. First of all, we're not a large research university. We're in Poughkeepsie. Yay! Which, by the way, is getting snow right now as we speak. We have about 6,000 students, full-time students. And our goal is basically to focus on distance learning and instructional technology. We're one of the most tech-savvy schools on the Hudson Valley, or in the Hudson Valley. And if you were to hear my boss talk about it, in the whole entire world, but we are pretty tech-savvy at our school. So basically, there's three main things that we covered for our implementation. We analyzed, we did lots of pilots, and then we implemented. Sorry about turning all the pages here. We had four phases. We're in phase four right now. Basically, the first phase, we worked with the Sakai Foundation, found out a little bit about it, and began implementing it within the IT department first. As you may know, the IT department usually likes to have new technology, and they like to get their hands on it first and play around with it and see how, if possible, if they can break it. Then we moved on to a small pilot with faculty and students. Phase two, we did a larger pilot and did an upgrade of the Sakai system. And that led to an interesting thing. When you have a small pilot, you realize that there are pretty much a fishbowl of the entire population at your school, which helped us to design things such as best practices and, you know, things that we should do for everyone later on when we rolled it out to a larger number of people. Phase three, this is where we actually became iLearn specialist, as we call it on our campus, where we were really selling the idea of open source and Sakai before it was implemented within the population of our school. It was very important for us to get buy-in from the faculty and the deans and our school president before we moved on to the implementation of the Sakai at our school. Currently, we're on phase four, as I said before. That's where we migrated from our old CMS to the iLearn instance. And basically, we went from a very small number of users to a large number of users, basically overnight. It was amazing. It was, if you've seen The Matrix, it's kind of like watching the numbers. We sat in our office watching the number of users go up and up and up. It was exciting for us, but it's kind of exciting to walk down the hallways and see Sakai being used in all the classrooms as well. Also, in phase three, we enlisted the help of R-Smart to help us with support issues such as help guides and user guides. For our system. Okay. Now, this is the slide that I know the least about, and I'm going to be honest about that. I'm not really the tech person, but if you do have questions about this, you can ask them. I will attempt to answer them. Basically, what we did, and this is true if you're... I'm not a hardware person, basically. But what we did was we tried to stay ahead of the usage curve when it came to our storage. We do... have the storage on site for all of our users. I may not be the proper words, but you know what I'm talking about. All the data, everything like that is stored on campus. Not in big boxes, but in blade servers and things like that. So basically, what happens now is that the course migration is what we're focusing on, and that's what I am more comfortable about talking about. However, once again, if you don't have your storage, if you're doing it on your campus, if you don't have that ready, when all the users start using it like you've been telling them to do, you need to have the storage ready. You're a fast clicker over there. Okay, as far as resources, we're a very small department. We're academic technology, which is a smaller part of the IT department at Marist College. And when I say small, there's three of us. One person's out with recovering from an operation. I'm here, and the third person is back at home. So that's it, basically. We do have some student workers. Basically, we do have one on-site developer, not exclusively with Java, but also doing a lot of support issues with us. And if you have a larger department, you may be a little bit less stressed than I am, so that's a good thing. If you have a small department, it is doable. Like I said, there's only three of us, and we've managed to get so far in our migration process. So, yay, small groups. and also, we have the support of R-Smart. Local lessons learned to share. This is where the do's and don'ts fall in. Do have a pilot. It may only be 10 students and one instructor. That's fine. That is going to be key to finding out how your population will accept the open source on a larger scale. Very good at indicating what you will need to focus on when you have 6,000 people or more using your system. It's important that you select a range of users and subject area within the pilot to get an idea if math courses will run as smoothly as literature courses, and so on. And it's very important to have invest a lot of time in getting the faculty excited about the transition, the migration, the new system in general, before you actually implement it. That is crucial. That's where we spent a lot of time last year, just getting everybody excited. And so when we did run it, roll it out finally this fall, this past fall, people were so excited to use it, and we're still riding that wave of excitement. So that's very important. Another key thing is make sure that you develop a communication plan. One of the great things about Sakai is that it is built for educator by educators, and that's something that we couldn't emphasize enough with our users. That being said, I will now turn it over to Megan. Thank you.
Well, unlike Reba Anna, I'm from a very large university. Indiana University is an 8-campus university-wide system, which means that we have campuses located all over the state. These campuses are very diverse. Some of them are as small as 1,000 students. Others have 40,000 students with 8,000 faculty. We're primarily a research center. We support traditional students come to campus. They live on campus as well as commuter learning. We don't have too much distant education, but we do have a little bit that we support. Our local implementation is called Encore CL, which is collaboration and learning. We are at the end of our implementation, so we've already completed that. One of the things that we did, I mean, we were an original partner for the Sakai project, so we were involved from the get-go. So we knew that we would be migrating to it. In the beginning, we decided to do a slow transition where we started off in the fall of 2005 with a very, very tiny pilot just to get some feedback from our faculty to see what they wanted so we could kind of drive development efforts to fill any gaps that they found. The next semester, it was a wider pilot. After that, we changed our strategy so that rather than people opting in to using the new system, they opted out. And one thing that I should mention is that we migrated from a homegrown legacy system. So our users were very excited about it. They loved that system. They had been able to drive all of the development efforts for that. It started at one campus and kind of grew outward. So it was kind of a hard sell getting people to move to this new system. The reason that we chose to do this just was because that system wasn't scaling to our user base. I mean, we have over 100,000 people using our system, and that's faculty, staff, and students. And one of the things that we did throughout this process was monitor the kinds of activities that were going on within Sakai. So we noticed that rather than in our traditional system where they were just posting materials and people were reading those and downloading them, that we had seen a large increase in communication. There's a lot of use of the chat rooms, forums, a messages tool to communicate. And as we've progressed through our pilot, we've monitored that and kind of tried to steer our development that way. One of the things that we found is that instructors are looking for ways to use the technology to support their teaching in various ways. One of the bigger tools that we just implemented was Molete, and that we're doing as a separate pilot. So we have the system running, and everybody's using it. And as we introduce new tools, we do a pilot where we get a small group of faculty that show some interest in some kind of tool or technology that they can apply in their classrooms. We get feedback from them. We make adjustments to that. We work with other schools to help that development, to meet those needs, and then we roll it out for the greater population. Some of the unique aspects that we have is we have a priorities committee. A lot of schools have started adopting this based off of our model, but it's got two different committees, a functional requirements committee, and that committee gathers feedback from faculty, staff, and students. We do this in a variety of ways. We have an online forum. We have open forums where people can come in and talk about the needs that they have in the system. And we take those, we aggregate them together, we find trends, we make recommendations about what users as a whole are asking for, and then pass that up to a committee that's comprised of faculty and students. And they go through and they're allotted a certain number of development hours every year or semester, and then they decide what actions, what things that they would like for the development team to work on. And we've had pretty great success in this. We get that feedback in, and we ensure that we're meeting the needs of our users that way. One of the other things that we do that's a little unique from other schools is course provisioning. We create a shell course for every single registrar-based site that we have, and then that makes it easy for faculty just to come in and start using the system, whereas other implementations have decided that they have to request that, and we found that faculty just like having the ease of having that there. They can use it if they'd like. If they don't, then they don't have to. We also do course-based requests for things that aren't semester-based or are supplements to typical courses so that faculty can go through that, and that's an automatic process. They fill out a form, and then the site's provisioned. We do the same thing for course sites, and then we also have a third type of site that we support, which is a portfolio-type site, which, depending on how the faculty member uses it, takes all the students' information and kind of aggregates it into a portfolio to show that they've met some principle of undergraduate learning. And then to support that, these different types of sites, they have the ability to combine sites. And due to the way that we provision our courses, we can't use what's in Sakai out of the box, but we made a special tool that allows faculty members to select different sites and combine them all into one so that they don't have to manage a number of different sites. We've also done a lot of integration with other systems. For example, we have integration with iTunes U. We started out by creating a very, very simple podcasting tool where they can create their own feeds, they can upload content and send that out. But iTunes U is pretty sexy, so a lot of faculty members were calling for that. So we did that kind of integration. And then we also, our student information system is PeopleSoft, and so we integrated a final grades tool as well as a second generation of that tool that we're calling SIS grade rosters, and that just brings the two systems. They're coupled tightly together so that the faculty member, if they're using OnCourse, can go in and take the grades that the gradebook has calculated and upload those immediately into the SIS system. And then if they're not using that, or they have a TA that's using it and they don't want to go into that system, they can also access those grades from the PeopleSoft side, which we found meets a lot of the different needs that people have. We're also a centralized IT organization, which differs from a lot of different universities have departments that have their own IT and they replicate resources. So we take the common needs that everybody has and we can support those. And we have a common help desk that people can contact. And if where the centralized IT isn't the appropriate place that they need help, then we can get them to the right people. I'm also not a very big hardware person, but we are almost all virtualized hardware, which is great. When we need extra computing power, we can bring that up immediately. Our database is also the same way. We typically run with about 5 CPUs, and we can scale up to 12. We've got 20 gigabytes of RAM that is adjustable up to 32, although we typically run at about 10. And our back end is an Oracle database. We have a fairly large development team. We have 12 developers. Right now we're looking to hire a few, so if you're not happy with your current job, come talk to me. We'd love to have you. We have staff that's dedicated to the user experience. They work with our usability lab and an accessibility lab to ensure that we're meeting the needs of all of our users. And then we also have someone that's dedicated to quality assurance and project management. And then in addition to that, because of our centralized structure, we have a help desk that people can go to, 2 tier 2 help desk staff that are dedicated solely to supporting OnCourse. We also have a training department, and they create online tutorials. They also do in-person workshops. We go out to different departments and do those. And then lastly, we have Centers for Teaching Excellence on every campus, and so those folks also help support OnCourse. So we have a fairly big shop. Cost-wise, we're about $2.1 million a year, with a cost of $16.72 a user. We do activity-based costing, so we can trace back the cost, which includes everything from the building costs to staffing costs, materials that we print out can be traced back to a particular service. And then I think I'm going to wrap up with some of the lessons that we've learned. It's really, really, really important to get faculty involved in a migration. They're the best person to do PR for moving the system, moving users to the new system, because when you have a raving faculty member that says that this is the best thing, that's going to cause about many, many, many people to just try it out, and then they can share their best practices with that with other people so that people get excited about using the system. Because aren't going to listen to the man tell them to use a system. They're going to listen to their peers. We also, one of the things that we did was we did an AT&T Fellows, where certain people at IU are given money to apply towards innovative ways for using an online learning environment, and we showcase them to also let the faculty know the kinds of things that they can do with the system. Kind of on the flip side, the downside is make sure when you are getting ready to go 100% with that new system that you do your own performance testing. There are a lot of people in the Sakai community that are doing performance testing, and a lot of people like to share those results. But the fact is everybody's configuration for their infrastructure is going to be slightly different, and it's really important that you take the time to scope out what your users' patterns currently are and then kind of give that a test run before you say, here's your great new system, go use it. And then the first day that they try and use it, during, you know, the rush at the beginning of the semester, and have it come crawling to a halt. And then conversely, for that, you also want to make sure that you have a communication in plan just in case something does happen, that you can keep your users informed. They like to know what's going on. Also, one of the things that I would suggest is to keep modifications to the Sakai hardware or to the Sakai software to a minimum. This is it has 2 main advantages. One is when you're upgrading from version to version, you're not going to have to do rework all of those customizations to make sure that they work with the new version. It also, it doesn't leverage the power of being in an open source, community source community when you're taking this burden onto yourself. So you'll get more resources if other people are using it, and you'll also get more input on the tool. Like if you have this new feature and you have these certain use cases that you're looking to support and you think that you have them covered for your faculty, but if you had gotten input from other schools, you might have found a few other use cases that your faculty would have liked, and then your tool would support that right off the bat rather than going back through another iteration and developing that. And then the last thing that I would say would be just to manage expectations when using Sakai. It's a lot different when you're using, when you're maintaining your own system or you're using proprietary software, because you either have control or you don't have any control. In Sakai, everybody's working on the software and they have their local priorities as well as the community priorities. And so if you tell your users, oh, we're going to have this really cool new blog tool, and the school that you're relying on to develop that gets a little bit behind on that schedule, then you won't be able to deliver on that. So you need to let your users know that things might be a little fluid, but that they will get the feature that they're calling for. It's just a little, you have to have a little patience with it. And now I'm going to turn it over to Maggie.
Thank you. I'm a walker. So we're a little bit different. We're what's called an academic health center, which means that we're a combination of hospitals and an academic institution. So we have five hospitals and 30 clinics statewide that we run. Oregon Health and Science University is the only medical school in the state, and we are state-supported, partly, and so that means that we really have to serve the entire state. We have five colleges, medicine, nursing, dentistry, science and engineering, and an interdisciplinary college, and about 16,000 employees. The majority of those employees are not academic employees. They're employees in the hospital and clinics. About two-thirds of our faculty, they're a little bit different than some other institutions in that not only do they do research and teaching, but they also have clinical hours that they're doing at the same time. And so usually the last thing they want to do is to learn anything about a new academic technology implementation. We only have 1,800 degree-seeking students. Most of them are graduate students. The only school that has undergraduate students is the School of Nursing, and they only have about 400, so the rest are graduate students. But we do have 1,200 continuing education students, so it's almost as many as our degree-seeking students because most of the health professions require continuing education. Most of that continuing education is done at a distance or online. In our graduate program, we do a lot of fully online programs as well, particularly in the School of Nursing, and we're trying to move even more towards that kind of environment because of the great shortage of nurses and of primary practitioner doctors. So we have five campus sites around the state of Oregon. One in Portland is our urban site, and the other are four rural campuses, and they truly are rural. In very small communities, 25,000, even 5,000. And then we have a partnership with all of the community colleges in the state that have nursing programs. And so we're actually using Sakai, or the community part, the project side of Sakai, to bring all of those together. And we have a common curriculum for undergraduate that then moves straight. So we use Sakai quite a bit, even though it seems that we have a small number of students. Next. So our implementation timeline is we had two different systems we were running. The School of Medicine was running Blackboard for their e-learning needs, and the School of Nursing was running e-college, and the other schools didn't have anything that they were using at all. And so we had to migrate from both of those environments. We started in nursing in the winter of 2007 with 30 courses and 400 students. That's a little bit bigger pilot than a lot of people may have tried, but the problem was is that we didn't want to have some students in a program, in one program, and some students in the same program in another program. So we kind of moved an entire program at once to be able to do that. In medicine, they started their pilot in the spring of 2007. They were obviously fewer classes that were involved. Both the pilots went really well. The main problem that we had, as I suspect all of you would have in, if you're migrating from anything, is faculty are very used to whatever system you're on, not only how it works, because what we found is that Sakai has a lot of the same features that the other system has, and maybe even more features, but it's in a different place on the screen. Or it works just, they may call something by a different name. And for faculty, that is really very bothersome to them. So we actually expended a lot of effort in developing things to help them with that transition. We went production school-wide in the fall of 2007 with 1,800 students. Like Indiana, we course provision every single course. We use the banner system. It automatically provisions all of our courses and loads all of the students and all the faculty assigned to those courses into the system. And so we do require that everyone at least puts their syllabus in the system. For online courses, we have a much larger requirement for what must be there. We also have some other integrations that some other schools haven't done. One is that we have a Hive server, which is our digital repository that we use as our primary place for storing all content, and then we bring that into Sakai instead of storing it separately in Sakai. We do use Adobe Connect web conferencing, and we have that integrated to Sakai so that it's easy to use. And we just started using the ePortfolio tool in Sakai in spring in 2008, and we have a plan to do quite a bit more. And we implemented our 2.5.1 version in fall of 2008. So we're in a hosted environment. At our institution, our IT shop expends almost all of its energy on the hospital work and very little on the academic side. And so we decided it was really important to go out and be hosted. Also, our Hive environment is hosted as well, and Adobe Connect is hosted. Pretty much everything is hosted, except Banner. That's the only thing that's run through our IT shop academically. And we do have a local streaming server for video and audio that we can integrate, but everything else is stored in our hosted environment. Go ahead. So right now we're running a total of 863 sites. 790 are course sites, and we run about 160 courses a term. Now the other are project sites, and for those of you who aren't familiar with Sakai, a project site is a communication or collaborative environment that is not term-based. So we run a lot of project sites for things like research groups, student groups. In the case of our partnerships with community colleges, we have course development groups. So they're places that have a lot of the same tools that a course site would in terms of forums and testing tools and announcements and calendaring and all of that, but they're not term-based, so they're used just for the members of that project. We currently have 5,700 unique user accounts and about 13,400 occupied seats, realizing that many of those users are taking several courses at once. And as I said before, 1,200 continuing education students. So we do have central support. Although we're hosted by RSmart, they provide only the level one support for us. And then we do have a help desk on campus of two people that provide central support to all faculty and students. We don't run 24/7. We did a little pilot of that, and we found that the number of calls between 10 p.m. and about 6 in the morning were not worth paying someone $40,000 a year to handle. So so we have them on pager, and that's the way that those calls get addressed. And then outside of the central support, what we've decided to do was to do a distributed model of instructional design support in the colleges. So right now the School of Nursing has two instructional designers, a multimedia programmer, and a director. School of Medicine has two somewhat technical support personnel. When I say somewhat technical, what I mean is that faculty can actually give them things and they'll load them up into Sakai for them, like a PDF file or a PowerPoint or something like that. And they plan to add an actual instructional designer. And the other schools right now don't have anyone, although each one is looking at adding something like an instructional designer to their staff. The other thing that we did that I think is really critical is that we created a lot of tutorials about the Sakai product before launching in production school-wide. And we did that using Camtasia, just little quickie videos, and I think it made a really big difference for people being able to pick up the tools more quickly. So what are our lessons? I think the big thing, and everyone else has said this, is to gain consensus early. We did, probably a year before we went into Sakai, we evaluated several learning management systems, both vendor-based and community source-based, before making the selection, so that as we moved along, we had some kind of consensus from at least the committees that were doing the evaluation, certainly not all of the faculty. The other thing that I think is really important for us was having a drop-dead date for the legacy system. If you don't have that, your faculty will hang on by their nails until the very last moment. So what we actually did is that we said, you know, on this date, these systems will no longer be available to you, and you have to have moved over. And we gave them about a one-year period in which to do that. The truth is we actually kept the legacy systems about 6 months longer, just in case we had to go back and find something, but we didn't tell them. So, but I think it's really important that you have that drop-dead date. We also had prepared what I call a Sakai 1-2-3 video course for students that they had to go through, and it actually had some activities for them to do to practice so that they would get used to that new environment compared to whatever the environment was that they were on before. I don't know how your schools are, but in medical schools and nursing schools, because it's so competitive, almost all students coming in were 4.0 students before, and they're very anxiety-driven about their grades. And so whenever anything changes, they really go through the roof because they're sure that it's going to impact their GPA. We do a lot of regular faculty development, usually 3 or 4 times a year, specifically around pedagogy for using Sakai, so that they're not just putting up PDF files or their PowerPoint files from their lecture, particularly in all online courses. I think that's really critical, or else what you end up having is a bunch of text just being transferred from pieces of paper online, and it's really not very effective. Every year we have new faculty orientation for all of our faculty, again to the system, so that they immediately come on board and know its availability and all of the things that it can do. We have an annual faculty showcase that recognizes people who've done a really great job with their courses. And then we have a lot of assistance for junior faculty. The other thing that we do, because we are a heavy research institution, is we work with faculty on scholarship of teaching, types of articles and journal articles, so that they can work towards tenure while still implementing an online course. Because otherwise, faculty won't invest the time in that. And then the last thing is, in terms of upgrading, for our environment, and if you're larger, it may be different for you, we found that we needed at least a minimum of 2 months to test any new upgrade that was coming down the line, and then at least a month to be running it in production without being fully loaded with students before we ran it. The Sakai community is really very good. They're at least as good, if not better, than most vendor communities with their upgrades. However, it is never bug-free. And depending upon which tools you use, you may find that the one tool that you use just this time got the most bugs. And so it's really important to do that testing in advance. So now we're going to turn it over for questions. And you know, if you want to ask a question and direct it to one of us or to all of us. Yes. I'm repeating the question for the recording. So they're asking about getting faculty buy-in, particularly in an academic health institution. What we did is that we did demonstrations of Sakai. We actually prototyped a couple of courses to show them how it would transfer from whatever they were used to and what it would look like now. And that really made a difference. For faculty, the key was kind of a functional description. So we actually, for both eCollege and Blackboard, wrote down all the functions that it did, all the functions that Sakai did, to kind of show them that they were, in fact, there, so they could crosswalk them, and then we did demonstration courses. Yes, and the woman, yes. Okay, well, we did. they're both really good systems, I have to say that first. For us, the deciding factor was that Sakai is much more of a community source product. Moodle, although it does have a community, it was primarily developed by one individual for quite some time. The community has weighed in a little more later. Whereas Sakai is really developed by an entire community. It was started through funding of 5 major universities. It's now grown to over 100 universities that participate, and they all, not every single one of them, but a lot of them have developers assigned to it. So we felt that we could get features included and developed much more quickly for us than we could with Moodle. There's pros and cons to that. You know, the pro to that is that you get a lot of things that maybe you didn't even know you wanted, but when they come, they're really cool. The con to that is that you get a lot of things you didn't know you wanted, and you have to sometimes take the time when they come out to really evaluate whether you want to include that in your system. The nice thing about Sakai is that it has kind of a core system and then lots of individual modules, and you can pick and choose which ones you're going to include in your system. But you do have to evaluate that. I think you had your hand up, sir. Okay, for our clinical staff right now, we have not put it in there. We use a completely web-based kind of read through it, sign off at the end system for most of the compliance stuff right now. We have done, as the state has come down with certain types of coursework that clinical staff needs to have. For example, in Oregon, there was a requirement for pain management for all RNs. And so we did put that on Sakai to go through. But some of the basic compliance stuff right now we don't, just because it's way too many people, and the automated way to get them enrolled and everything hasn't been worked out for us. So testing for... Oh, testers for upgrades. Oh, okay. We have a committee of faculty and staff of about 15 from across the campus that have agreed to do quality assurance testing whenever we have a new upgrade come in. And so they do 2 things. One is that they load a course that they've been teaching before, and then they run through it to make sure that it does everything that they want it to do. And we've tried to make it so that that committee is a variety of people, from people who have fully online courses with a whole lot of tool involvement to people that are primarily teaching in a classroom and just use it for, you know, putting up their lecture notes and some readings and things like that. How about, should we ask the other, for testing, how do you guys do testing?
Our mics don't work.
Are you sure? This one does. Oh. We do something similar. We do technical testing where we run the upgrade scripts and make sure that those check out, do data verification. We also do code reviews of new code that's coming in. And then we have a technical side and a functional side, and the functional side's involved in testing major upgrades, and we're also now including them in some of the smaller patches. That's primarily the staff at the Centers for Teaching and Excellence that are involved in that, but we've also included faculty to do some kind of, just check through their courses and make sure that the features that they use are working correctly.
Actually, I wanted to answer about the training or how we do. We do all of our training through our system, and basically we run an online version of our face-to-face class, and it goes very well. Once they're in the system, they go through the online, we monitor it, and so on. As far as our testing, we do have graduate students that we have about 12 that do Q&A testing for the foundation, and they follow a very strict protocol.
Okay, I see that our time is up, but we'll stay here and answer some questions still. And like I said, if you want to show up and visit with us during lunch, we're happy to do that as well.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.